Welcome to another episode, and thank you for listening. In today's episode, we're turning our attention to a topic that is making waves not only in Texas, but across the country. Texas Senate Bill 4, also known as SB 4. The eyes of Texas and the eyes of the country are fixed on this new law, eagerly awaiting the outcome of legal battles that will determine its fate. In my opinion, SB 4 represents a significant overreach, fostering a climate of profiling while sidestepping federal immigration laws and due process. The state's legislature's decision to empower the state to take immigration matters into its own hands is a contentious move with profound implications. To delve deeper into the complexities of SB 4 and its potential consequences, we are joined today by Kristen Etter, Director of Policy and Legal Services for the Texas Immigration Council. Immigration enforcement has historically fallen under federal jurisdiction. However, recent legislative actions in Texas have granted state law enforcement officers and judges unprecedented powers to detain and deport individuals without adhering to federal due process. It is a concerning development that warrants our attention and understanding. We'll explore how Texas law enforcement officers now possess the authority to stop and question individuals without probable cause, fundamentally altering the landscape of immigration enforcement in the Lone Star State. Join us as we unpack the far-reaching implications of SB 4 and shed light on the intricate legal and social dynamics at play. Stay tuned for a thought-provoking conversation with Kristen Etter.
Welcome to the Latino Business Report. This podcast covers business, people, and issues of the day from a Latino perspective. The Latino Business Report is brought to you by TAMAC, the Texas Association of Mexican American Chambers of Commerce. TAMAC is the leading Hispanic business organization in Texas since 1975. Now for your host, J.R. Gonzalez.
Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode. Today, we're going to be talking about SB 4. That is Texas's Senate Bill 4. It's something that's in the news, something that the entire country is watching because the effects of it are far-reaching and, in this podcaster's opinion, overreaching. Today's guest is Kristen Etter. Kristen is an attorney. So we're going to be talking a little bit about SB 4 so you, the listeners, can be a little bit more educated as what this means, not only for you, but possibly your friends, neighbors, coworkers, and the other people around you. Kristen, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks, JR. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us, Kristen. I really appreciate it. You are an attorney. And who do you work with, Kristen?
So I'm the Director of Policy and Legal Services at Texas Immigration Law Council. We're a new organization here in Texas that seeks to start and support a movement for nonpartisan immigration reform, both at the Texas state level as well as the federal level. And so we've been doing a lot around education and awareness of SB 4. I personally testified against every single version of SB 4 when this was being debated in the four special sessions of the 88th legislative sessions in the fall of 2023. All of the versions were terrible. The version that ended up passing Senate Bill 4, which is what we're going to be talking about today, is, I agree with you, it's a terrible, unconstitutional, illegal, widely overreaching series of new laws in Texas that will have the potential of really destroying our Texas communities and our Texas economies.
Yet our state legislature, in all their wisdom, passed it.
Yes.
Okay. Before we get into that, as you said, there have been several versions and you testified against all of them. What were some of the versions or what were some of the things in the previous versions that did not get passed? Is there anything out there outstanding to you?
Yes. And we've been advised that we might see kind of a repeat of some of the versions that did not pass. Those notably included a border militia, which would allow really anybody to round up migrants and arrest and deport them, not even requiring them to be peace officers. So that was a border militia bill that
You said like, so everyday citizens, I mean, you can get your good old boys and your friends and neighbors and go, well, let's just arm ourselves and go to the border and start arresting people.
Exactly. It was a border militia bill, and it actually had some widespread support within the Republican Party. And so it did die, didn't make it out of the legislature. But we have been told that there is some sentiments about filing the bills in the next legislative session in 2025. But that was a version that thankfully didn't pass. However, we did see other versions that would have also authorized peace officers to do their own deportations. So the Senate Bill 4 version that ended up passing requires this magistration component of it.
Okay.
And rather
Sorry to interrupt. Peace officers were able, in a previous bill, peace officers were able to do their own deportation?
Correct. It did not involve the judicial system at all. It essentially allowed peace officers to
be judge and jury along with
exactly judge, jury, and executioner. And it would have allowed them to just round up, investigate, make their own determinations, and deport people without involving attorneys, without involving judges. And so that version didn't pass. But the version that did pass, however, it really co-opted the entire judiciary in Texas, and it does involve a component of SB 4. Really, the two signature components are the first is that it does create these three new state criminal immigration offenses of 1, illegal entry, 2, illegal reentry, and 3, is the refusal to return to foreign nation. And we'll talk about how those all interact and work. But that's the first component, is the creation of these three new state crimes. The second component, and which is what I was getting at, is it requires in some instances and authorizes in other instances state court magistrates and judges to sign state removal or deportation orders, ordering folks that are non-citizens or folks that cannot prove their citizenship status to return to the foreign nation that they presumably entered from, which is in most cases going to be Mexico, without regard to where they're actually from.
Hmm. Wow. Sounds a little scary there. So the legislature, and that before you're talking about criminalization, but prior to, if a person was here undocumented, that wasn't a crime per se, but now it is, or correct. Under SB 4 it would be.
Correct. Well, prior to SB 4, immigration matters were solely within the purview of the federal government. So it was, there are certain other federal immigration related crimes. We do have a federal illegal entry. We also have a federal illegal reentry, and the state claimed that they modeled their SB 4 after some of the federal laws, but they're very different and distinct. And also, again, states don't have the ability to enforce and make their own immigration laws. So clearly in violation of very well-established Supreme Court precedent that dates back 150 years.
So why does the state of Texas feel it is necessary for them to pass these laws? I mean, you've heard the arguments.
So it really, Senate Bill 4 is really an extension of Operation Lone Star. So Operation Lone Star has been in effect since March of 2021. The arrests started in July of 2021. And by arrests, I mean rounding up migrants en masse along the border and charging them with state criminal trespass charges. And so really they started, like I said, in the summer of 2021, late summer of 2021, and they have built an entire separate, substandard, and unequal system of justice to prosecute migrants in Texas with the idea that this would deter and punish immigration into Texas. And so it's really Senate Bill 4, the way I see it, is it's an escalation of Operation Lone Star, and it gives the ability of all peace officers. So currently Operation Lone Star is really focused along the border. It is enacted and really, you know, relies on state law enforcement officials, Department of Public Safety, as well as Texas Military Department officials to make these arrests under current Operation Lone Star practice. But Senate Bill 4 is not a border bill. It is a statewide bill, or rather law, I should say, a statewide law that has statewide application that gives state peace officers all over Texas the authority to investigate, detain, arrest, and then essentially deport non-citizens that are accused of either illegally entering into the country, and that is, did they enter Texas from a foreign nation at a place other than a port of entry, or did they illegally re-enter Texas, which is, did they ever have a prior triggering immigration event that includes denial of admission, exclusion, removal, or deportation from the United States? If somebody, a non-citizen, has any one of those prior immigration triggering events, they will always be subject to prosecution and deportation under the illegal reentry provision of Senate Bill 4.
And that is absolutely, and that's new.
Yes.
Okay. So does that come into effect here forward, or is it in retrospect? So if a person has previously been found entering illegally, would that apply, or does it apply only to from the time the law is passed forward?
That's a great question. So when it comes to the illegal entry provision, there is a 2-year statute of limitations for misdemeanor offenses, which is what a first-time offense would be, a 3-year statute of limitations for most felony offenses, which is what it would be if you have a prior conviction. But what that means is that they can go back 2 years on a misdemeanor or 3 years on a felony, meaning if there was an entry between a port from a foreign nation anytime 2 or 3, depending on the classification, that could be prosecuted. When it comes to the illegal reentry, however, the prior immigration triggering event, there's really no timeline for that. So that might have happened 20 years ago. You might, for example, be a person who 20 years ago had a deportation or removal from the United States, but subsequently married a U.S. citizen, for example, adjusted status, became a lawful permanent resident. You could be here for 20 years as a lawful permanent resident. But if you have any one of these prior immigration triggering events, again, denial of admission, exclusion, removal, or deportation at any time in your past, and if you're ever found in Texas, you will be always subject to prosecution and deportation by state officials under Senate Bill 4.
Okay. You know, there's some people that feel that this is a good law, that Texas needs it because of what's happening at the border. I'm not going to disagree. I mean, we have issues at the border. But what gets me, Kristen, is why isn't there more effort put into actually doing immigration reform and something that actually works, as opposed to depending on an antiquated system that's been outdated for decades and still trying to put Band-Aids on that and come up with things like SB4 to try to enforce it? I mean, it only stands to reason that there would seem to be some effort. I mean, all the millions and millions of dollars being spent on the border, if they could just fix the system and try to mitigate some of that stuff, wouldn't that be easier? Wouldn't that be the more favorable route to take?
Yeah, absolutely. Currently, Operation Lone Star, $10.5 billion with a B, has been spent on a program or a policy, a series of policies that have had zero impact on solving our immigration issues, zero impact on solving the issues that we have at the Texas-Mexico border. And if you can imagine, the $10.5 billion could have been spent to update our ports of entry, for example, to roll out expedited work authorization programs, for example. It could have provided resources to expand capabilities at ports of entry. So if you hear proponents of these laws talk about they just want to have people come through ports of entry, that's all they want, and that was their intent, or at least that's, if we take them at their word, that was their intent. Well, the issue is that ports of entry are currently closed almost entirely to people wanting to come into our country to work, or for people wanting to come into our country to seek asylum. That is because we have very strict laws when it comes to who's able to come in through the border, port of entry, and who's not. Currently, if you want to request asylum, you have to have been provided a CBP1 app appointment. And that is a very small number of people. And so when we hear people say they should just go through the ports of entry. Okay, great. Let's use part of that $10.5 billion to expand capabilities and to urge the federal government to open up the ports of entry, to allow people that want to work in our country the ability to actually go up, show that they have a work permit or whatever, show that they have an asylum claim, and allow them to be background searched, allow them to enter in an orderly manner. And again, if we take them at their word, let's use that money and let's urge the federal government to increase resources so that we can do that. So we know exactly who's entering our country, so that we can match employees with employers, so that people can get to their jobs that they have waiting for them. Most of the clients that I represented in Operation Lone Star, and it was about 3,000 folks in a 2.5 year period that myself and my team represented and my role prior to my current role, almost all of our clients had jobs waiting for them. They were here to go to their job. Most of them had everything lined up. They were just trying to get through to get from point A to point B so that they could work, support their families, so that they could then send money back to their home countries, which would, by its very nature, increase conditions and better conditions in home countries. And then really so that we as Texans and we as Americans can have a better economy, so that we can have the jobs filled that need to be filled, so that businesses can grow. I mean, we have so many businesses right now that are stagnant or going out of business because we don't have enough workers. And so it's a very antiquated system. It's a very backwards way of trying to solve issues. And it's because we're not working together with the federal government. The state has decided to try to do its own thing, and it's not working. And Senate Bill 4 is not going to work either.
No, I get it. I mean, I've always been an advocate of a guest worker program. To me, a guest worker program would solve a lot of the problems. But yet, as to your point, it needs the infrastructure to be able to vet those folks coming in. And then, Kristen, I have my opinion. I'm going to try to keep my opinion out of it as much as possible during this podcast. However, it may come through loud and clear. What's your take on the folks that go, "Oh, all these immigrants and all these folks are just coming up here and taking American jobs or taking our jobs away"?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the numbers, it's estimated that there are between 6 and 11 million job openings currently in our country. We have 4 million people who are unemployed currently in our country that are citizens. And so if you just look at the numbers, even if every single person who is working age unemployed were to go get a job tomorrow, we would still have millions of job openings. And so the numbers and the statistics just don't support that. The way that our economy is currently operating, the way that our birth rates are on decline, the way that we have a rising aging population that's going to be out of the workforce entirely. If you looked at our economic needs as a state and as a country, even just objectively, take out the polarization of immigration and how polarizing it is currently. But if you were to just look objectively, we are in a situation where we should actually be paying folks to come to our country to work. That's really what we're currently economically facing, is a very severe job shortage that's only going to get worse as we have population declines.
I agree. As a business person, I definitely concur with that, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, the pandemic was devastating. It affected a lot of businesses, but we're kind of semi-post-pandemic right now, and there's still a huge shortage out there. The essential workers are not there. Some of your favorite restaurants and stuff have to change their hours. Some business hours have been changed. There's a lot of things that aren't happening, for example, in the construction industry. I'm not trying to stereotype here, but if it wasn't for immigrants, you know, houses wouldn't be built. I mean, where the laying of cement, the concrete, the housing, I mean, if you look at the roofing industry alone, predominantly, you know, a Hispanic-based or controlled industry. Not saying that employers aren't doing their due diligence to make sure people are here, you know, lawfully and providing the proper documentation, but a lot of that stuff can actually be counterfeited or just kind of passed off. I mean, let's be realistic. the government knows when 537 people are sharing the same Social Security number, you know, they know there's an issue, but yet they're still going ahead and taking those taxes. And that's another misnomer that I wanted to talk about, that people think, oh, they're here, they're taking our, they're getting our benefits, or taking all this, or not doing anything to contribute. These are folks that are contributing to the economy, and a lot of them are actually paying taxes, because the U.S. government has a form that if you're here undocumented, if you're here, you know, without proper authorization, and you're working here, here's, go ahead and pay your taxes. You think some of these folks are going to go down at the end of the year to H&R Block and get a refund? No. I mean, the U.S. government is actually making money off of some of these folks that are here working. But the point being is, without them, our economy would... Texas has a strong economy. I'm very proud of that. And Texas has been doing a lot of things correctly over the past years. But my opinion, and this is this podcaster's opinion, that the Texas economy is so strong because of that strong immigration force and the Latino workforce in this state. I mean, if it wasn't for that, what would happen? Right now, the last report I read, it was by the, I think it was Department of Agriculture, that they admitted a couple of years ago that they recognized that about 49% of the people in the agricultural industry out there picking the crops, 49% were here unauthorized. So they know it, but if we don't have those unauthorized folks out in those fields, the crops aren't going to be picked, and they're going to die on the vine.
Absolutely. And I think if you look at states that have a high number of immigrants, such as Texas, that's exactly right. I mean, we are doing well economically. We could be doing much better if we had more immigrants, to be quite honest. But we are doing relatively well because we have such a high number of immigrants in our state. And if you look at states such as South Dakota, look at their economy there. They have a low number of immigrants and their economy is not doing well. And so you could literally, and there was an article, I don't know what publication it was in, but it actually went state by state and compared economies with levels of immigration. And I mean, it's just, those are the facts. I mean, the economy are strongest where you have the highest number of immigrants. And so in terms of absolutely, I mean, just everyday lives of Texans, of people across the country, would be so devastated if immigrants were to just disappear tomorrow. I mean, you walk out the street, who is out there building our roads? Who is out there building our buildings? You cannot walk down a street in Austin and not find a construction project, whether it's residential, commercial, the roads are getting fixed, the bridges are getting fixed, and everybody that's working is an immigrant. It's clear. You hear the music, you hear the Spanish, like, they're all immigrants, and they are the people that are building and maintaining our state, our country. They're picking our crops. And without them, we would not have affordable homes. We would not have affordable food. Our economy would be devastated.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Like, they're affordable now? Jeez.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, especially in Austin, Texas. I mean, oh my gosh.
Exactly.
But you're absolutely right. And if you look at it, they do contribute. And I mean, I walked into a Chinese restaurant the other day, and the entire staff, except for the owner, was Latinos. I mean, Hispanic staff. Yes. They're out there cooking the meals, or in the kitchens, or doing the jobs. And I don't know about other people, but at least every drive-thru I go through, I'm hearing that Mexican music blasting out of the back room in there. And most of the window workers there, the people that are staffing, are Hispanic. There is a point that I think some people get confused. In that, first of all, the state of Texas is 40% Hispanic already. Hispanics are the largest population in Texas, and it's going to continue to grow. And a lot of that growth isn't due to immigration. It's just due to birth rates. I mean, the average age of a non-Hispanic white, I believe, is like 37, 38 years old, where the average age of a Hispanic in the state of Texas and in this country is going to be in the mid-20s. We're younger. We're working, we're childbearing, good Catholics, have a lot of kids. I mean, it's happening. The population growth is there. There's nothing you can do to stop it. I refer to it as the browning of a state, or the browning of a country, and I think there's a lot of people that are just afraid of that. They're afraid that the country is changing, the demographics, or the complexion, if you will, where it scares the hell out of them. They're going, well, let's do everything we can to stop people of color from immigrating to Texas into the U.S., which they often forget. This whole damn country was built on immigration, and Texas was part of Mexico, and it was actually the white settlers that were immigrants to this part of the country.
Exactly. The border crossed them. They didn't cross the border. I mean, absolutely. And every single one of us is an immigrant or a family member of an immigrant that came here, unless you're Native American. So, I mean, we're all immigrants.
Oh, yeah. And some people kind of scoff at that analogy, but it's true. It's true. I mean, I like to use the example of the, you know, people talk about the great American Western, you know, the cowboy. I go, I shake my head. I go, okay, let's talk about the American cowboy. Do you think horses came over on the Mayflower? No. It was the Spanish conquistadores that brought them into Mexico. And it was there where the horses and the Mustang herd started growing. And the Mexican vaquero, that actually was the Mexican vaqueros that showed the Anglo settlers in the Texas, you know, how to be cowboys. They were still riding them little sissy English saddles. I mean, it was, you know, the saddle horn, the chaps, the other equipment that was necessary to really run cattle and horses. It was the Mexicans that showed the Anglo settlers how to do it. I mean, think about it. Look at rodeos. Rodeo, that's not an English word. I mean, it is a Mexican word. So there has been a lot of influence, and I think a lot of people in the, let's not call it whitewashing, that almost sounds right, in the trying to rewrite history. I mean, there's things that are historic, things that are factual, and a lot of people forget, don't want to look at it and realize that the Latino population and the Mexican influence, not only in Texas, but across the country, has been huge. It has been huge, and it's because of that influence that, you know, this place is a great place to live. Yet Absolutely. There's those who want to try to thwart any type of additional growth because they're afraid that they're losing their population, they're losing power, they're losing influence, whatever it is. You know, thing is, white people aren't having enough kids. I mean, the last census showed that. The last census showed that for the first time that actual non-Hispanic whites were they declined as far as birth rates, and that's due to age. So it's an aging population. Hispanics are younger. They're actually a growing in population, and like it or not, that is your future workforce. That is your workforce. Those are going to be your essential workers. Those are going to be your teachers. Those are going to be your doctors, your firemen, your lawyers. Without the population, without a growing immigrant population, the state of Texas and the country is going to have some huge economic difficulties. But to your point, we need to look at it and not try to just stop the borders or militarize it. What we need to do is say, come up with a comprehensive immigration reform that's going to allow people to come into this country, like a guest worker program or whatever, to be able to fill the needs that are necessary. We did it back in World War II, the Bracero program. You know, Mexicans came out from Mexico and filled the jobs where the servicemen were, you know, across the Atlantic fighting in World War II. And when they came back, there was a shortage of jobs. And then the president at the time put into effect a thing called Operation Wetback. Yes, Operation Wetback was the name, where they started gathering up military and law enforcement, started just gathering up large groups of Latinos and putting them on cattle car trains and deporting them into deep Mexico so they couldn't find their way back. But what they didn't realize, or what they didn't stop to check, is how many of those people they deported that were actually American citizens.
Right.
And Kristen, that's what I'm looking at. Let me get off my soapbox for a minute. But with SB4, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, you don't need proof. I mean, a law enforcement agent or anybody who carries a badge in the state of Texas can actually stop and question somebody just on the suspicion of them not being here legally.
Well, actually, it's even worse because you don't even have to have any suspicion of wrongdoing. There doesn't need to be any suspicion of criminality or wrongdoing at all for an officer to just walk up to somebody. That's called a consensual encounter. So you could be at a job site, you could be at a mall, you could be just walking down the street. And if an officer comes up to you and wants to ask you questions, you're not required to stay and answer them. But if you do, and you answer a question, for example, where are you from? I'm from Mexico. how did you get here? I came across the river. That's enough to arrest and deport you, just that in and of itself. So I wanted to, I highlight this only to underscore, again, I mean, you could be doing everything right. You could be doing nothing wrong. And still an officer, if he or she wants to, could investigate you. And if anything you say during that interview could be established probable cause to believe that you illegally entered or re-entered, that's enough to arrest and then put you into this deportation state deportation scheme. So I wanted to highlight that. That requires no suspicion of wrongdoing.
So no suspicion of wrongdoing, but they're going to stop somebody and question them, or what you call a consensual what?
Encounter.
And they're going to initiate these encounters based on what?
Anything they want. That's what I'm saying. I mean,
and but then, yet profiling is still illegal in this country.
Right. And so the next level of police interaction after, again, a consensual encounter could be just nothing. Just if an officer wants to, he can stop and start talking to you. The next level is what we call an investigatory detention. And that does require reasonable suspicion that somebody is engaged in criminal activity. But in the case of Senate Bill 4, and so, for example, that would be enough to pull somebody over in a car. But for Senate Bill 4, if an officer is like, well, I think that person illegally entered the country, what are they going to base that on? You and I know it's going to be based on the color of a person's skin. It's going to be based on the music they're playing, what they look like, whatever.
What
they're wearing, anything that would tell an officer, hey, this guy might be an immigrant. Okay, that's enough to even pull him over and start what we call an investigatory detention. And that's where, again, I mean, one of the things I've been doing these last couple months is we've been doing a lot of know your rights education and awareness because, you know, these types of police enforcement investigations and encounters do not require you to talk about your immigration status. You're not required to answer any questions. Really, the only information you're ever required is if you're lawfully arrested, you have to provide your name and your residence address and your date of birth, and that is it. So I really have been trying to emphasize, if anybody asks you how you entered Texas, don't answer that question. Invoke your Fifth Amendment. Tell them that you want a lawyer before answering any additional questions. Because why would somebody ask you how you entered Texas? What is the point of that? Why would they need to know that? And it's because they want to arrest you and deport you.
But then too, I mean, let's face it. If a police officer is going to do that, I'm sure it can be quite intimidating to the person that they're questioning. And how many of them are going to have what it takes to just not answer and turn around and walk away? I mean, just walking away, I'm sure it just seems like a very flawed way to do things, and it just leaves the door open for so many different things. And what also gets me is I'm sure there's not gonna be I can see a slow afternoon, two cops are sitting in a car, and one guy goes, "Look, Andy, that guy over there looks like he's probably an illegal Scandinavian. Let's go question them." No, you know, I mean, exactly. Canadian, Scandinavian, I mean, wherever they're from, if they're white and they look like they halfway belong, I don't think they're going to be stopped, but it's going to be people of color, people such Absolutely. As myself and a lot of people out there that are going to be quiet. I mean, me coming out of Home Depot on a weekend after I've been working on the yard, I just want to make sure I don't forget my wallet because, I mean, with this law, anybody could stop me and ask and start, you know, questioning me as to where I'm from and what I'm doing.
So, yes, and I'll say, yeah. No, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, so to me, Kristen, and you're the attorney. I'm not. I'm just a, you know, everyday guy. We're looking at here that in this effort to try to thwart some of the overflow of immigration, we're basically taking away the rights of an entire or jeopardizing the rights of an entire segment of the U.S. population. And that's going to be people of color, especially Hispanics.
Yes. Yes. And I will say law enforcement officers did not ask for these new laws. That should be the number one focus that we need to continue to talk about, because there are a lot of new laws that are passed in our Texas legislature, and it's really at the behest of prosecutors and law enforcement officers that say they need this tool in their toolbox. This was not one of them. Law enforcement officers do not want to do this. we have had several different law enforcement agencies across the state come out and say, you know, we're not trained in immigration law. We don't want to do this. We want to focus on violent crime in our community. We don't want to erode the trust that we have built with our immigrant communities by becoming ICE agents. We're not trained in this. We don't want to be doing this. Our counties weren't given additional money to do this. And so really you've seen these, especially these last couple of weeks when it's become such a big deal, because it was in effect for some period of time, a short period of time, but you did see a lot of different law enforcement agencies come out to say they don't want to do this. And secondly, because they're untrained in immigration, we have seen cases, and I have, this is one of the trainings that I do, but I actually feature two different probable cause statements of cases that I've handled. In one of them, the officer determined that the person was undocumented because he had grass stains on his clothing. And in another probable cause affidavit, the officer determined someone was undocumented based on his smell. And I actually have it pulled up.
Wow.
Because I used this in one of my trainings. And this is what an officer said. Quote, undocumented aliens emit a distinct odor due to sweat and being exposed to exposed to the environment, end quote. So again, we're not requiring officers to undergo any type of training. And again, I don't want to, you know, they're just law enforcement officers for the most part are good people doing their jobs, wanting to keep our communities safe. I am so thankful and appreciative for our law enforcement officers.
Absolutely. And please, if I want everybody to understand, I am not, you know, blaming the police officers on this. Their job is hard enough for the most part. They don't want to do this.
Exactly.
But Kristen, you know, as well as I do, there's always going to be that small 1% or 2% of those officers that are overzealous that see this as an opening and go, let's go pick on somebody.
Exactly. You're going to have bad apples just in that profession.
As you do in every profession. As you do in
every profession. So exactly.
But seriously, grass stains, they had grass stains. And so that's probably my.
I'm going to read it because I have this one. I have them both pulled up. It said, a woman was pulled over. They asked who her male passenger was. She said it was her cousin. I continued to ask if her cousin had a license or any form of ID, and she said no. I observed grass on his clothing as if he had managed to travel through the brush and asked them to exit the vehicle. The passenger was identified only with Mexican ID. She admitted to picking him up, and she was arrested for human smuggling. And so, again, it was based on grass stains, and I guess grass on his clothing. So that was it.
I'd say that's the most absurd thing I'd ever heard. But now, because the way a person smells Okay. Let's talk about this. This SB4, and I'm sure there's some listeners out there, people going, well, you know, it doesn't affect me. You know, I'm just an everyday WASP person who's living my life, not caring about anything. However, with SB4, if I read it correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just kind of spitballing here. If a person were to be transporting somebody unknowingly that was undocumented, they could actually be subject to arrest. Is that correct?
So you're talking about, and again, this is confusing, but there is another Senate Bill 4, and that is from the third special session of the 88th legislative session. That one is the human smuggling statute.
Did that one pass?
It did pass, and that one has been in effect since February 6th of this year. Now, that one did not change the text of the statute. It only changed the mandatory minimum penalties. The problem with that particular statute, however, is that it is extremely broad, and it makes it a crime now subject to a mandatory minimum of 10 years for a person to use a motor vehicle to transport a person with the intent to conceal that person from a peace officer. That is the crime of human smuggling under 20.05 of the Texas Penal Code. Law enforcement has interpreted an intent to conceal when a driver has an undocumented passenger. That's how they pull people over for smuggling, especially along the border. We had a lot of clients who were just driving people in a car. They weren't actually concealing them. So I think there are a lot of misunderstandings about the smuggling statute. They think, oh, the person must have had them in the trunk, or they must have been in a tractor trailer. The law does not require that. And in fact, most people arrested for human smuggling under Operation Lone Star are just driving a car with an undocumented passenger. And law enforcement officer is then making these subjective determinations that the driver must have had an intent to conceal that person because that person was undocumented.
And even though the driver may have not known that person's status, they could still be subject to arrest.
Well, it leaves a lot of discretion for law enforcement officers. Let's just say that. So they, you know, we typically see in those situations, they'll separate the passenger and the driver and they'll start questioning them. And whenever there's any type of inconsistency, you know, so they're very fact specific. But the point is that there's a lot of discretion that officers have.
So if you were to, after work on a Friday, get a group of your coworkers, hey, we're all going to go over here to have a few beers and unwind. And everybody piles into your car and you get into a little fender bender or whatever, you get pulled over and you find out that one of your coworkers, unbeknownst to you or anybody else in the car that are here actually undocumented, then the driver could actually be, I mean, I know it's a stretch and it's up to the officer, but technically the officer could go to jail for 10 years for human smuggling?
The driver. If the officer had probable cause to believe that the driver intended to conceal that person from a peace officer.
But you just said if they're in the car. The way the statute reads is that's the, that is.
Oh, yeah. Again, it doesn't require actual concealment. And in fact, most people are just passengers in a car, just like you described.
I'm going to start checking IDs and background before I give people rides. And it's crazy, 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 crazy. Okay. Kristen, I don't want to take up. Thank you for the time. This has been very, very educational. But what are some of the things that people need to watch out for? I know that the consensual encounter with officers, that a person is not required to give a police officer an answer. All they require is what, their name, date of birth.
Right. So if you're driving a vehicle, you do have to have a valid driver's license and insurance. So you would have to show that if you're driving a vehicle. If not, you can be subject to driving while license invalid or suspended. Right. So you do have to have a valid driver's license and you do have to show that if you're pulled over. However, aside from that, nobody is required to divulge immigration information to a state law enforcement officer. And you only have to provide your name, your residence address, and your date of birth to an officer if you've been lawfully arrested. So aside from that, I mean, Fourth Amendment means you don't have to consent to a search of your person, property, vehicle, home. You don't have to answer any questions under the Fifth Amendment about your immigration status. And your Sixth Amendment is if you are arrested, you have a right to an attorney. So you have a right to have a court-appointed attorney if you're not eligible or if you're indigent and you can fill out an indigency affidavit, you are eligible. And so one of the other big pieces of advice we've been giving to folks is always request an attorney. The Senate Bill 4 allows a filing, Senate Bill 4 allows the arrest and deportation of a person prior to a lawyer getting involved. And the way that that could happen is that there are three areas that a person can get deported three times during a prosecution for illegal entry or illegal reentry. One is during magistration. Magistration is what happens after a person is arrested for any offense, not just a Senate Bill 4 offense. They're supposed to take you within 24 to 48 hours, depending on if it's a misdemeanor or a felony, to a magistrate. That is a judge who is essentially tasked with telling the person what they're being charged with, figuring out if there's probable cause to further detain the person, setting a bond, and asking if they want to apply for a court-appointed attorney. They're not entitled to an attorney at that particular magistration. The fifth thing that is going to be added, however, under Senate Bill 4, is they're going to be asked if you want to be deported under the state deportation scheme in lieu of further imprisonment and deportation. And so we're concerned because folks might not understand the ramifications of being deported by the state. Folks might be confused about the legal system and they may just want to get out. And it depends on how this is being explain to them. But we are also encouraging folks, don't ever agree to do anything unless you've consulted with an attorney. So I would also really highlight how important it is, because a state deportation can have such widespread and really damaging repercussions, both from the perspective of if you did have something pending with immigration court, that could then be considered to have been abandoned if you leave the country. And also, especially for folks that are not from Mexico, getting deported to Mexico and being ordered at gunpoint to return under threat of felony prosecution for the third crime, which is refusal to return or refusal to comply with order to return, which is punishable by up to 20 years in prison, can have very, very significant ramifications, including the potential that you would never be able to return to Texas without being prosecuted for illegal reentry subsequently. So that's the other piece of advice. So we're really encouraging folks to invoke their Fourth Amendment right, not agree to searches, Fifth Amendment right, not answer any questions about immigration status. And then also, if they do end up getting arrested, requesting an attorney and not agreeing to a deportation before they consult with the lawyer.
And you brought up something there that I think is significant, that a lot of the folks coming into the country right here, undocumented, aren't from Mexico. They're going through Mexico, but they're not Mexicans.
Correct.
And yet, it seems like the whole narrative and what you see on the news, everybody wants to blame Mexico. People are wanting to blame our number one trading partner in the world. The U.S. is number one trading partner. I mean, gosh, when the U.S. coughs, Mexico sneezes. I mean, it's a relationship that we need to maintain. How does Mexico feel all about this? I know that they put out a statement last week. I haven't completed reading their statement, but how does Mexico feel about the U.S. deporting, you know, folks to Mexico, whether they're there or not, or even their own citizens who actually, in their eyes, have done nothing wrong?
Correct. So Mexico has unequivocally said they will not accept anybody from the state of Texas, including their own Mexican citizens, because they don't believe they're criminals. They don't believe they've done anything wrong. And any type of agreement has to come with the federal government. So they have said, and they just last week filed amicus curiae, which is a friend of the court brief up at the Supreme Court, and I should say the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is where the case is at right now. And they lay out their arguments that Senate Bill 4 would frustrate the diplomatic relations between Mexico and the United States. And it essentially ignores Mexico's right to determine its own policies regarding entry into its territories. And so they have said unequivocally they will not accept people that Texas tries to deport.
Kind of gives Mexican standoff a whole new meaning, doesn't it? All right.
Yes. So, and, you know, unfortunately, it's going to be the people like you have a situation, it's really going to be the migrants or the non-citizens that are collateral damage in this whole battle, because they're going to be ordered to return by an armed officer. And then Mexico is going to say, we won't take them. And then Texas can prosecute them for the third crime, which is failure to comply with order to return. So it's really unfortunate, because it's just the collateral damage are going to be the migrants that are going to be caught in the middle.
And the prosecution of these migrants, are these adults or are they children as well?
So Senate Bill 4 offenses do also apply to children starting at age 10. So we don't know if they will prosecute juveniles, but in the state of Texas, a juvenile can be prosecuted starting at age 10, so from 10 to 16. And then at age 17, you're considered an adult for criminal liability purposes, not just for Senate Bill 4, but for all offenses. And so there were amendments that were proposed to not apply this to children, and those were rejected. So we don't understand why they would want to do that. But
these are immigrant children and not U.S. Yes. or Texas citizens' children.
Well, they're non-citizen children.
They're non-citizen right. children. Wow.
So
up to 10 years old.
10 years old, starting at age okay. 10. Yes.
And we're almost out of time here, but I do want to make one or two more points before we go. And once again, Kristen, thank you so much for your time on this subject and your knowledge. What a lot of people feel, and it's happening, I'm not going to disagree, that, you know, criminals, drug dealers, human traffickers, smugglers. I mean, that's what's coming through. It's all that's coming through our border. You know, other countries are emptying their jails, you know, so they can send them to the U.S. Or it's because of all this immigration that we have such a high high drug problem, or that's why human trafficking exists. It's because it all comes down on the immigrants that are coming from the Mexican border. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, if you look at statistics, immigrants commit crimes at much lower rates than citizens. I mean, that's just those are just facts. I mean, that is not even subject to debate. Immigrants commit crimes at much lesser rates. And so when you see, for example, who our governor is busing, I mean, you can see they're women and children and families are coming here to try to make a better life for themselves and their families. People are coming here to work jobs that we have open. And so it's really unfortunate that there are, of course, going to be, like we talked about, bad apples in the police force. There are going to be bad apples in any large segment of whatever population you choose to categorize, right? So we do have the very unfortunate events that occur where you see somebody who's an immigrant that committed a heinous crime or was accused of committing a heinous crime. And then all of a sudden, that label is applied across the board. And that's so unfair. Just like when a citizen commits a heinous crime, we don't then demonize all citizens. I mean, so it's it's unfortunate when we have those situations, and they do occur and they will occur. And again, crime is one of those things that people commit crimes across every demographic, but immigrants commit crimes at much lower rates. And that is just statistics.
Yeah. I don't think this whole problem is predicated on people going, let's just go across and sell our drugs and do everything. I mean, if there wasn't a demand, there'd be no supply.
And right. Fentanyl is not coming through between ports. It comes through ports by U.S. citizens.
And the cartels and the coyotes, and I mean, they're making big money off of this. What is it like? What do they charge? Like $8,000 a person to try to smuggle somebody across into the U.S.?
Thousands. It kind of depends and fluctuates from what we hear, but thousands. And so, yeah, I mean, essentially, because we don't have a functioning immigration system, who controls the immigration system? It's unfortunately the cartels. They're the ones that are making the money. They're the ones that are organizing and, you know, and if we were to be the ones that had a functioning immigration system, we could take that all away from them and we could stop that overnight.
It's crazy, crazy. We need that functioning system. We need immigration reform big time. Yet, every time it seems like here as of late, when we start getting close to some sort of positive things on the border, it seems like one party shoots it down because nobody wants to fix the problem, because as long as it's a problem, that's political fodder for election year.
But absolutely. It's very unfortunate that it's become just a political game without any genuine desire to solve
fix it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, let me just end on this note. For the most part, is it a problem? Yes. Do I want a secure border? Do most – everybody wants a secure border. But just to say the borders are open, I think, is a mischaracterization. To say that everybody coming across are taking our jobs and are drug dealers and human traffickers and offenders, it's incorrect. For the most part, a lot of these folks are hardworking people who come from a country who is being oppressed, either a corrupt government. They come out of poverty. They live in areas where it's controlled by gangs. And if they don't go someplace else, either they're going to be killed, their sons are going to be recruited into gangs, their daughters are going to be sex trafficked, or they'll be killed if they don't comply to some of their wishes. So it's just a matter of what human being, what person, I don't care where they live, if they lived in those conditions, wouldn't make an effort to go someplace else. And what better place than the United States of America, where it's supposed to be justice for all. And as we look at SB4, definitely feel it's overreaching. Does something need to be done? Absolutely. I think this is not the correct step, with $10.5 billion already being spent of taxpayers' dollars, of my dollars, of your dollars, to to with Operation Lone Star, I mean, it's ridiculous. There has to be a better way. And as we're looking for a better way, let's just keep it in mind, too, we're dealing with human beings. We're dealing with people out there that, can contribute, that can make a difference. And it's just it's just sad that we've politicized this thing so much and turned it into a football and just taken our feelings and, humanity out of the equation, which is just not right, But anyway, Kristen, I want to thank you very much. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to put your can I put your contact number or email address on, the podcast notes? So if anybody had a question, they could
absolutely
reach out to you. And where can they find you? Do you have a website for your, for your organization?
I was going to mention, and it's www.txilc.org. And we have a lot of materials in English and Spanish that we have prepared, as well as frequently asked questions on Senate Bill 4. And those can all be found under our resources tab, and would be happy for any of your listeners to go and use those resources.
Well, Kristen, we'll definitely do that, folks. It's going to be in the podcast notes. And before we go, do you have any closing comments or thoughts you would like to leave with the listeners?
I would just thank you, thank your listeners, and really want to invite folks to try to reframe this very divisive and polarizing debate. And I think part of the problem is that we only hear the fringe elements on both sides' voices be amplified, and we're missing most of the segment of our population. Most people agree on most things when it comes to immigration solutions, but those aren't the voices being highlighted. The only voices being highlighted are the fringe elements on both sides. So I would encourage folks to just keep on talking about this, to not get caught up in the fringe elements on either side, to work with your neighbors, work within your communities, to figure out ways that we can turn this ship around, because it has gotten into a very bad place. And it's unfortunate, because if you take a step back and you look, we should be, again, celebrating immigrants. We should be welcoming immigrants. Our communities and our economies are stronger because of it.
And that is not opinion, that is fact. Wow, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Latino Business Report. I'm your host, J.R. Gonzalez. We've had Kristen Etter join us today in a very informative podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a like, follow us. We also have a website, latinobusinessreport.com, where you can make some comments. We also, you can find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you if you have any opinions on this subject. And also, you can find our complete library of work on YouTube. So till next time, folks, have a great day. Be careful. And if you're Latino, you better carry your ID with you out there. Who knows, you know? Because as this is happening in Texas, you know darn good and well the rest of the states are looking at it and going, let's do the same thing. Anyway, folks, have a great day, and we'll talk to you next time.